Last case for argument is Thomas v. City of Peoria. Mr. Cohn.
May it please the Court. I'm Sherman Cohn. I'm arguing for the appellant, Joseph Thomas. The key issue in this case is whether Section 1-2-9 of the Illinois Municipal Code, when it provides that for the violation of any municipal ordinance, the first process shall be a summons or a warrant, gives the City Corporation Council or his delegate the authority to decide in any case whether to file a civil complaint and have that served on the defendant, or obtain a criminal warrant and have that person arrested for disobeying the ordinance, even if the ordinance does not provide for any process other than a civil process.
Mr. Cohn, I've got, though it wasn't argued by the briefs, I've got problems with your client standing to bring this argument.
Well, Joshua
Thomas is the one who didn't get that civil process. Your client had there was a mistake. There was a mistake in the warrant. And I don't see how the process that you argue for would have benefited your client at all.
But for the process, my client would not have been arrested. So he was arrested.
He was harmed by the error in the name in the warrant, wasn't he?
He was harmed by the warrant, by the error in the warrant, but also, we argue, by the warrant itself, that the warrant itself should never have been issued, that it was beyond the power of the city attorney to obtain that warrant. So, but for that, he wouldn't have been arrested. So, yes, he was harmed.
And
that's what Judge
McCabe
found.
It was but for the error in the warrant he wouldn't have been arrested.
But it was both, because if the process had occurred correctly, there never would have been a warrant, and therefore there never would have been an arrest. So so the validity of the warrant itself is something that at least we believe, and Judge McCabe believed, that there was a standing to raise, because that's how he was injured. So if the process would have occurred as the Peoria City Code provides for, so that it would have been handled as a civil complaint, civil service, there never would have been a warrant. He never would have been arrested. So it actually took both elements to cause him the harm that he was caused. So that's why we're focusing on Illinois Municipal Code 1-2-9, which is also what the city relies on. And we claim that gives the city the power to pass ordinances to either have a civil process or a criminal process. The city of Chicago has passed an ordinance, which is described in the People versus Edge case, which is in our brief, that says that for any violation of any city ordinance, there can be an arrest, and the criminal process proceeds.
Why does it matter whether his arrest was compliant with state law? What does that have to do with the Fourth Amendment?
Well, this court in United States versus Tree in 1989, Judge Flom set forth a two-step process for looking at the objectiveness of the reasonableness of an arrest. And the second part of that, which is what this is about, was the arresting officer authorized by state or municipal law to affect the arrest.
Because that would turn an error of state law into an automatic violation of the Fourth Amendment.
If the state law does not authorize the arrest at all,
suppose that state law could authorize it, that wouldn't be unreasonable. And then why wouldn't we say, as a matter of federal law, there's nothing unreasonable about this? Because, some states would allow this kind of arrest, and it's not unreasonable. It's not like arresting people for not having their hair combed or something like that. So then the issue was there probable cause and so on, despite the error named.
Well, Your Honor, I go a little further than that. That Peoria could pass an ordinance through the political process by the city council to authorize arrest.
You're confusing two things. You're confusing federal standards under the Fourth Amendment with state requirements. He may have a perfectly good remedy under state law to challenge this statute, but what's unreasonable about it? State law requires that to arrest a person you have to have DNA evidence. And a state officer arrests someone without DNA evidence, but probable cause to believe he's a criminal and so forth. That would be perfectly lawful under the Fourth Amendment.
Your Honor, then this court would have to overturn its earlier test.
Well, that would be perfectly lawful. We've said in many cases a violation of state law is not a violation of the federal constitution. State can, if it wants, impose higher requirements than the Fourth Amendment does on arrests, and then you'll have a state law claim, but it doesn't change the contents of the Fourth Amendment.
But when the arrest is entirely unauthorized.
No.
That's the key issue in this case. And
you should be in state court complaining under state law of an unauthorized arrest.
Well, Your Honor, the test set forth in the Treat case, which is what we're relying on.
Well,
set forth by this court.
By a number of cases that don't support it. McNair being one of them. I remember McNair.
McNair case.
That there can't be a challenge to an arrest based on unpaid parking tickets.
Your Honor, that was the unpaid parking tickets led to the suspension of the license plates. There were two opinions in McNair, and the first opinion made it clear that it was the suspended license plates that led to the arrest, not the parking tickets. So that was there. What the policeman saw was a change that what he saw was a violation that was occurring, the driving of a car with a suspended plates.
Judge Easterbrook said, quote, Officer Coffey had probable cause to believe that the McNair brothers had not paid their parking tickets.
Your Honor,
on this basis was proper, unquote.
Your Honor, I respectfully suggest you take a look at the first opinion in that in the McNair versus Coffey. There were two opinions, year 2000, one in the year 2002.
I had to struggle through that one myself.
So the arrest was not for unpaid parking tickets. It was for driving a car with expired plates or suspended plates. Our position is that
you're confusing two parts of the Constitution. You can complain about government arresting people for non-existent offenses. That's one thing. But the Fourth Amendment is about the procedures used in arresting people. It's about the oath and probable cause and so on and reasonable suspicion and this and that and the other thing. it's not about the underlying grounds for the arrest.
Well, Your Honor, our claim is on both the 4th and the 14th, I mean the 4th through the 14th, but the 14th itself, with procedural due process of having notice.
But look, arresting a person for a non-existent crime, that's substantive due process.
Correct. Well,
that's not procedural due process, right?
Suppose
the government makes it a crime to fail to wear a tie, right? That would be challenged under substantive due process. If they arrested someone who was not wearing a tie, you wouldn't say that was a violation of the Fourth Amendment unless, you know, he was wearing a tie or the police officer didn't see that he wasn't wearing a tie.
But a procedural due process under the 14th Amendment also requires that there be a notice of what is a crime.
Merging the two points. You're not taking my case. Arresting a person who isn't wearing a tie on the public streets or something, or isn't wearing a bandana, or isn't wearing doesn't have an American flag on his back, something like that. That would be unconstitutional, but it wouldn't have anything to do with the Fourth Amendment, provided whoever arrested the person for not having an American flag tattooed on his forehead had probable cause to believe, yes, he didn't have that tattoo. Right? It's a separate issue.
Well, but our argument, both to the district court and in our briefs here, are based both on the 4th and the 14th Amendment, and the 14th Amendment procedural due process of notice.
You're just incorporating the 4th Amendment into the 14th Amendment. You're not adding a substantive due process charge.
But there's also procedural due process under the 14th
Amendment.
But
you don't understand. There can be full compliance with procedural due process and a violation of substantive due process.
Yes, sir.
Because the police are enforcing a law that doesn't exist or it's unconstitutional or what have you. They're very different.
Well, here, to begin with, this is not an action against the police.
I mean, suppose in some state someone was arrested. Suppose they arrested a doctor for performing an abortion. And then the doctor had a constitutional right to perform the abortion. You wouldn't say his Fourth Amendment rights were violated because he was arrested for performing an abortion, right? They didn't have anything to do with it.
Of course not. It'll be the
same. Similarly, if you arrest a person for failing to pay a parking ticket, and there's no basis for that because failing to pay a parking ticket is not a crime or not, that's a substantive concern. That's not procedural.
I can only repeat that our argument is also based on the 14th Amendment.
Yeah, but you're missing the point, because if the 14th Amendment just incorporates, so far as your argument, if all you're arguing is that, although the 4th Amendment is part of the Bill of Rights, not applicable to the states, but it got incorporated somehow into the 14th Amendment, you're still talking about the 4th Amendment, reasonable searches and seizures. You're not talking about where there's a legal basis for arresting someone.
I trust our briefs make clear that we have two arguments. The other one is based on the 14th Amendment itself. And that requires that it be clear that something be a crime, and that that has to take you to state law here. And if it's not a crime, and that's what this court ruled in the Trigg case, if it's not a crime under state law, then it violates that provision of the 14th Amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Cohen. Mr. Jennington?
Morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Counsel, my name is Peter Jennington. I represent the defendant appellee, Sonny Williams, and we'll be arguing on behalf of both her and our co-defendant, City of Peoria. With me today at counsel table is City Attorney Randy Ray. The plaintiffs claim here is essentially, despite Atwater and having no right to be free from a warrantless arrest for a minor offense, despite that, they do have a right to be free from an arrest pursuant to a warrant. And I think that is a difficult position for them to take. The court has long, Supreme Court as long ago as Beck versus Ohio indicated that the scope of conduct for which someone could be subject to arrest pursuant to a warrant was at least as broad as that for which they would be subject to an arrest without a warrant. There have been a number of cases involving arrests for minor ordinance violations which have been upheld by this court, and we've cited those in our brief. But I think the Supreme Court case that really hits the point that the court was making earlier is Virginia versus Moore, where the Supreme Court framed the question as whether a police officer violates the Fourth Amendment for making an arrest based on probable cause, but which would have been prohibited by state law. And the court found that that was not a violation of the Fourth Amendment.
There's one aspect of these Supreme Court cases, though, that's a little bit troubling. That's this allegation that there's an in the presence of condition to arrest being constitutional under the Fourth Amendment. And Justice Souter, I think, in that Virginia case, said something about we're not quite saying that it's required, but he didn't say it wasn't required. And I wonder what your position on that is.
I think you're right, and I think you're making an interesting point, because some of the bases that the court has talked about are, you know, stopping an ongoing crime or something, which is why I went back to the court's opinion in Beck, that where we have the warrant process, we have an additional safeguard in the process. And what the court has said there is that, you know, if we have this realm of conduct for which you could be arrested without going through that procedural safeguard of the warrant process, the scope of conduct for which you can be arrested with a warrant has to be at least that big, because you have that procedural safeguard, as we did in this case. We had to go before the judge and, you know, tender the information that we had, request a warrant, and the judge had to approve that, as he did.
I mean, if it's in the presence of, you don't have to have a warrant, and if you have a warrant otherwise, that's good enough? Is that, it doesn't have to be in the presence of?
I don't know. There's necessarily always in the presence of a requirement for a warrantless arrest. I don't believe that there is. But I think that certainly with a warrant, you do not have the in the presence of requirement. You couldn't have, because you'd have to take the time to go and get the warrant.
Well, the only troubling part is that the Supreme Court in all those cases is inserted in the presence of as being part of the analysis.
And I think the reason for that is that's just how the cases have come up, that they have come up in the context of warrantless arrests where an officer has observed a suspect doing something and arrested them on site. I think the situation where we have the warrant simply has not come before the court in this particular fashion. Unless there are further questions from the court, I don't think I have anything further I need to add.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Jennings.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Cohn, does he have any time? Yeah, for a minute.
Your Honor, I would like to refer you to the bottom of page 33 of our main brief and to the middle paragraph of page 6 of our reply brief, which makes the additional and a separate argument having to do with a procedural a due process under the 14th Amendment. So that's not just a Fourth Amendment issue here. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you very much, both counsel, and the court will be in recess until tomorrow.